You are listening to KTWHLP at 99.5 FM in Two Harbors, Minnesota.
Welcome to Living Through the End of Life. Stories and resources will come to your living room every week as we examine various aspects of living and dying well. This airs on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. The show replays on Sundays at 12:30 p.m. In this week's edition of Living Through the End of Life, Katie Neff Dawson and I have a conversation about volunteering at hospice. Katie is the volunteer supervisor of hospice at Essential Health at St. Mary's in Duluth. We will discuss the many uses that volunteers serve, how they are trained, and how to get involved if you are interested. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katya Gordon, and with me at KTWH on the phone is Katie Neff Dawson. She is the volunteer supervisor for Essential Health Hospice Services. Did I say that right, Katie?
That's right.
All right. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for calling in and being with us here at KTWH.
Oh, my pleasure. I love talking about hospice.
Wonderful. Well, we love hearing about it, as our show will illustrate. So let's just start with learning a little bit about you. How did you come to be doing this work, and what is the work that you do now?
Well, I kind of fell into the job. I was looking for a job, and I didn't have any problems. You know, some people go, oh, hospice, and I think I have a pretty good relationship with death and dying. And so they hired me, and I've been here for a little over 6 years, and it is a fabulous job. I feel like I have the best job in the world. I work with an amazing, incredible staff, and then I get to work with patients and family at a most sacred time of life. And then the best part is I work with volunteers who are some of the most compassionate, kind people I have ever met. They are just golden.
That does sound like a pretty nice life. You say you have a good relationship with death and dying. I would love to hear what that means to you and how did you come to have this? It's not necessarily something that you pick up in college.
Well, yeah, it was before college, actually. I just have had a lot of people die in my life and have been with a lot of people and had a lot of different experience. You know, birth and death, I, especially here in hospice, have found out so many similarities. And I was really not that crazy about the birth side of life. I've always, you know, kind of leaned towards, I really appreciate elders. And while on hospice, it's not all elderly people by any means, you know, it's people of all ages. But I do lean towards older folks in preference for being around people. And so, yeah, I just had a lot of experience with that. And it just, I've been really comfortable. I've had a couple of close calls myself in my life too. And one of the things I've learned in hospice is that I'm very comfortable with death, but you know, the dying process, that could be a little scary. And again, that's the wonderful thing about hospice and the folks that work in hospice is it makes that end of life experience so much better that it's not about the dying process. It's about living until you die. And I think you probably hear that often in this work, is we help you live until you die.
Yeah, it's even sort of the name of our show, Living Through the End of Life.
James Disley Saunders said that, and that's what it's about. When people say, how can you work with death? And I said, no, I work with living.
You
know, I work with people having the best possible life.
Yeah, they say that very well. So you coordinate volunteers. Let's get into sort of the work you do. I'm guessing you also are familiar with or have experience being a volunteer with hospice yourself, or did you just go right into the supervisor role?
I never actually, it was something I always thought I would do because I had had quite a bit of experience being by people's bedsides and caring and being a caregiver, but I had not. Actually, I have experienced in supervising volunteers and other jobs. I'm 62 and I've had a lot of jobs in my life.
Uh-huh.
So, Yeah, so I've had other experience with volunteer supervision, and so my job requires me to recruit volunteers, to train them, to keep them on, retain them, and continue to educate them through their time here and connect with them. And also there's a lot of documentation and relationship building around that. So it's about recruitment, training, retaining, and boy, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, well, really you're good at it, because not everyone would say that sounds like fun, but as someone who works with a lot of volunteers and also volunteers myself, I totally agree that, you know, working with people on something that they are doing not for paycheck is a whole different game.
Volunteering for hospice, I really do think is a calling. I think a lot of my volunteers would say, you know, that they felt called to hospice. It's not like, right, you know, one day thing where you pick up garbage on the side of the road, which I think is a blessing. I'm so grateful for people who do that. But it's definitely a calling, and they have a lot of people who say, oh, I don't know how you can do that. And I would say that a lot of my volunteers say, oh, I get so much more than I give. I just receive so much, much more back. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely a calling.
Yeah, and that has definitely been a theme in many of our interviews that when we talk with hospice people. And, you know, we've talked to many professionals in hospice, but I know there is a vital role that volunteers play. And maybe you could just outline, you know, what's the difference between someone who's a professional hospice person and a volunteer?
I think that we are all professionals. Volunteers are just non-paid staff.
Yeah,
we have to treat them exactly like staff. They are mandatory part of hospice care. 5% of our direct patient care needs to be volunteer to be part of Medicare. And so that's kind of the bottom line piece. But I also think volunteers are the heart of hospice. And professionals can be volunteers as well. Doctors, nurses, hospice started out as a mostly volunteer practice that, you know, a lot of the nurses were volunteers and the doctors and the chaplains. And a lot of places you'll find that a lot of those people are volunteers too. So that we consider them, they are a crucial part of the team. Yeah, so volunteers, like I said, I think are the heart of hospice, although, like I said, our staff is amazing. Mm-hmm. We have chaplains, we have nurses that are just, and the aides, I can't say enough about the aides. The aides are there doing the most intimate work with people and patients, and they are just such a gift. But volunteers also are probably the people that spend often a lot of time with people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many roles for them. While they can help us with administrative office things, the most common volunteer is someone, what I call a home volunteer, where they make visits. They make visits in facilities, in homes. They might offer respite for a family member who needs to go to the store or go shopping, or maybe they got tickets to the hockey game and can you stay with grandma while we go out to dinner or something like that.
Hmm.
But they can also do things like help weed gardens and make light meals. We also have volunteers who do veteran support. We're part of the We Honor Veteran program, so volunteers do two things. They do a wonderful 15-minute presentation thanking a veteran for their service. We give them a pillowcase that's made by a 4-H group and a flag and a service pin. We have vigil volunteers that will stay with someone who doesn't have anyone, and we unfortunately have a lot of people like that in our world. At the end of life, when someone's what we call actively dying, and sit with that patient and be there for them, because we feel that no one should have to die alone. And those people are, you know, can be called in the middle of the night sometimes.
And
they're willing to do that. Or they might, maybe the family lives in the cities and is traveling up here. They'll sit with the family or the patient until the family can arrive. There's also, you know, this is not, you know, proven. Often 2 weeks, around 2 weeks before someone dies, they may have a transitioning period. And that might include some agitation and wanting to try and get up a lot and stuff like that. And vigil volunteers will help out with that. Sometimes it just needs to be someone in the room, not even touching them, but just somebody near. There's a
calming presence.
That, you know, some of past life, your past life stuff that you haven't dealt with is kind of coming up to you in the end, and you're struggling with that. Hmm. And people have to work through that in their unconsciousness. And that's just one theory, but there's lots of stories around that.
There are a lot of stories. We've heard some amazing stories on this show of family members and loved ones just having all kinds of communications with people that they know, that they have known in their life, or that they are going to, people who have been deceased. And really,
I have a vigil volunteer who was waiting for the family, and when the family came, you know, we're so far removed from death, this volunteer just did an exquisite job. I was just so grateful to this person. The patient was in a facility, and the volunteer, the family came, and they had no idea how to be with somebody who was dying.
Mm.
And this volunteer had such grace. She sat with them. She offered to sit with them. I had gotten the coffee cart. Some of the facilities have a coffee cart for this kind of situation. And she said, "Do you want me to stay?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, oh, yeah." And she showed him, you know, in by modeling, she showed that you can touch, you know, grandma. And then she just started asking questions about the patient, and got the family talking. And she said by the time the patient passed away, the patient had a smile on her face. The family members were all talking and laughing and crying. And I just went, that's why I think volunteers are such a gift. I mean, it's just, I hear all sorts of stories like that.
And we all have families. I mean, I think we can all imagine ourselves in that situation where we would just be so grateful that there's someone there to ease the journey and make us comfortable, and who is not thrown by what's happening, but is very comfortable with it. And I love that you share all the different things hospice volunteers can do, because I think we can sometimes think of it as being at the bedside during the moment of death. And that is certainly part of it, but you know, time-wise, probably the smallest part. And there's many weeks and months leading up.
I have 11th-hour volunteers who have never actually been there when somebody died.
Yeah.
They've been on a million calls and never been there when somebody actually died.
Yeah.
I think there are actually a few people who want to die alone. You hear stories of people leaving the room and somebody dies. There's a couple other things I didn't mention that volunteers do. So bereavement is a benefit of, which I'm sure you've talked about, but bereavement follows the family for 13 months after death, and we have volunteers that help with that. Chris Belfield is one of those folks that do that. They call at 3 months, 9 months, and then they send an anniversary card. And those calls are so important. Most of the time they call, they get a hang up, but then you get a hold of somebody, and they will tell you that I've heard all sorts of stories about, there was just one recently that came back that she said, I got a hold of her, and she went on and on. She told me so many great stories about her husband. Her husband sounded so terrific. And then when we were going to hang up, she said, thank you. She thanked me so profusely and then started crying.
Oh.
She said, nobody wants to hear my story.
Oh.
And I think that's so true. We have until the funeral's over to grieve.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody wants to hear about Ed 6 months later, you know?
Yeah. So, wow, that is a wonderful story. And I can totally see the first anniversary would be a big moment for plenty of people. And so that you make sure you have care through that first anniversary.
So they call it 3 months and 9 months. And so that's something we've been able to do during COVID, that keep those calls. A lot of patients aren't really up for calls or Zoom meetings. So one of the things we've instilled is a letter writing. You know, I talk with the team and review each patient when they come on, and I see if they might like a card. And so I have a few volunteers that are writing these letters. And at first, these people do things that I can't do. I mean, those phone calls are really hard. Those bereavement calls are very hard for me. It's like cold calling, right? You're calling someone you don't know.
Right.
These cards, these people are writing really, truly intimate letters to people. I have gotten a few sent back and read them, and I'm just awed by them. And so one of the nurses said to me, I was visiting Joe, I'm making up the names, I was visiting Joe, and he had just gotten a card from the volunteer, and out of the card fell an autumn leaf.
Hmm.
And he just picked up that leaf, and he smelled it. He put it up against his cheek, and,
wow.
You know, Jeannie read the card to the patient, and the volunteer wrote a big, long note about fall and autumn and how beautiful it was out. And this patient was just enthralled by this leaf. And I'm just thinking, these people
wow.
are amazing.
They are. And it's just is so simple, isn't it? It's like, and maybe that's the beauty of hospice, is the absence of sort of regulatory roles. Like, you're just allowed to be human. And I love the idea of writing a personal note and having the freedom to really speak from your heart. I just think that's such a beautiful concept, and it obviously lands wonderfully with people who are vulnerable in that specific way. What a wonderful story.
Quinn, this college fellow, he's up at Scholastica. He started writing it out. Oh, this is going to be good. Oh, he writes the sweetest letters. You know, he talks about, oh, a chickadee just landed on his windowsill. I'm just like, you know, it's just another lesson in holding judgment, right? You know, it's just like
right.
He writes these long stories to these, and the patient wrote a note. The patient's wife wrote a note, and it was sent to me, and it was to give to Quinn, saying, "My husband appreciates your notes so much." She just went on and on. We have all the cards, you know, up on the countertop. I just think, wow, that's so cool. I would have never thought that.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Wow. Katie, we need to move into some of the, let's talk a little bit about the process of becoming a volunteer. I mean, if there's any listeners like me out there, they're thinking, I want to do this. So how does one become a hospice volunteer? Is there training? Is there mentoring?
Yeah.
You mostly learn on your feet?
There's a lot of training because, you know, we're expecting you to go into people's homes, wherever that is, whether it's a facility
right.
or a private home or an assisted living, or sometimes it's meeting someone on the street, you know? Yeah, so there's a pretty intensive training, and that actually kind of screens people out. I've had people get through the training and say, you know what, I don't think this is for me.
Hmm.
So, and that's a good thing, because I think I would give anybody our training so they can learn about hospice, because I think there's a lot of myths about hospice. First, we are now on an online training process, and it's a national program, and it's really quite good. I think it's a little TMI, but I think there is really no such thing as too much information.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes anywhere from 6 to 10 hours to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we usually have a face-to-face meeting, and that's where we get to know each other. And certainly one of the qualities I'm looking for someone is compassion, and I'm speaking of compassion as Jesus or Buddha would teach about compassion, that deep expression of caring without judgment, because
mm-hmm.
that's something we really try and hold. We are human beings, but we really try to hold no judgment in hospice. You know, we meet
right.
people where they are.
And that seems
and
to be the
really
most essential piece of the whole thing, is just ability
really
to meet
important.
People where they are.
And I think
yep.
it's also a time when people are moved to proselytize, and so I want to make sure that people understand we're not here to shift anybody's perspectives. You know, I think there are people out there with good intentions who want to save people, and that's not what we're here for either, too. So that face-to-face meeting is kind of important to, you know, find out and where somebody might fit in hospice. People often want to give back. You know, maybe they've had somebody die in hospice, but they don't want to do patient care. But there's so many other ways to give. We
yeah.
have people who play music up at Solvay. We have people who bake cookies up at Solvay who, you know, have some contact, but it's not necessarily patient to patient or
right.
Or
that was going to be my next question. And I think, so it's not like once you are trained and you're officially a hospice volunteer that you have to do all the things that hospice volunteers do. You can kind of pick your strengths and stick with those.
And you can change it anytime. Sometimes people choose to be at Solvay and they might find that's not enough patient care, so they want to do a facility two or something like that. We usually, we kind of say what we ask for is 2 hours a week and a commitment for a year, but that is entirely flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people working 40 hours might have a hard time to do 2 hours a week or,
right,
or things like that, but we are really, really flexible. So it was, like I said, the online training is about 6 to 10 hours. The face-to-face meeting is a couple hours, and we kind of figure out where you want to go, what you want to do, and then we'll set you up. Some of the job roles require a little extra training. We also, you know, like the vigil volunteers or the veteran volunteers have a little bereavement callers, and it's about procedural and just a little bit more information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we have quarterly educations that we keep people up to speed about what's going on and share any new things and time for people to share their experiences. I'm always available to debrief. Our chaplains, the whole team is available to our volunteers too at any time, you know, to debrief. Sometimes, you know, they're with somebody for a year or more in their home for a year, and it's truly a loved one they've lost. So we always debrief and talk and you know, the whole crew, the whole team is so supportive of each other. And the staff is so appreciative and considers the volunteers definitely part of the team. So.
Yep. Oh, what a wonderful description. And are you always looking for volunteers? Do you have more than you can use?
Always.
You are looking for new people.
Okay. We do have a lot of retired people because that is usually who volunteers. And so as they kind of age out or move south permanently sometimes, we do have a lovely bunch of college students. So that kind of shifts. So
really?
We have snowbirds
that
go in winter and college students that leave in summer. So, yes, always looking for volunteers. We can always use them. And so many different ways, and we just so appreciate them.
Yeah, what an extraordinary person that would be a college student doing this and would even know about it. I think that's wonderful that you get
and
those young people, too.
Yes. And, you know, I have to say, we have kind of a tough website to get to. Solvay is one way. The other way is just to call our office. You can put the number out there. It's,
yep.
218-786-4020, but the best way is just to call us and get a hold of us and or call Ascension. They can forward us because we really need to get a better website on that. But anyway, always looking for volunteers. And the college students, a lot of them are med students and they're looking for or want to be med students or nursing students and they're looking for an experience as well. And boy, they do get at their stories. Oh, we had one fellow write a letter to the editor once about his experience, and it was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And,
what a good idea as someone who's thinking of getting to the medical field. I cannot imagine a better way to train oneself to see the human side of things. And
the other thing that makes volunteers really important is they are another set of eyes on the patient. You know, we're always trying to, you know, take care of that patient. And one of the myths about hospice is that people come on to die, that's hospice is about death.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it's not. But one of the things that we do is we have to discharge patients if they're no longer eligible. And I remember that the team was considering discharging someone that was in a facility, but I read the report that this person was no longer scooting around. She was very active in her wheelchair. She was always scooting around, and she was not. Now she was just spending all her time just sitting in her wheelchair wherever she was left. And that kept this person on hospice and kept our team engaged with this person. So they can make or break somebody's ability to stay on hospice. So, they, like I said, they're a very important part of the team.
Yeah, what a nice story. We are out of time, Katie, but it's been a pleasure to chat with you. And I think, man, I will certainly consider
you're
doing
gonna
hospice
volunteer for
after
hospice? Yay!
It just sounds like
I'm signing you up.
Such a a wonderful thing to join. And I mean, people obviously give a lot, but they get a lot out of it too. I mean, I just think we're all kind of craving meaningful connections with people, and especially around this particular issue right now. So that's
it. Really is
wonderful.
A gift that people let us in at this time of life.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you so much, Katie, coming onto our station and being part of our Living Through the End of Life series, and hope that hospice can continue doing its wonderful work.
Me too. Yes. Thank you so much for your time.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
When we stand together, it's our finest hour.
Thank you for joining us here at KTWH's Living Through the End of Life. Next week, Kevin Rodland will be with us at KTWH. Kevin is the nurse manager at Solvay House, a hospice home in Duluth. Learn about Solvay House, what it provides, for whom, and how it has functioned during COVID. Thanks for joining us. A listing of books mentioned on today's show, as well as music you've heard, can be found on our website at ktwh.org. An extensive book list about death and dying, as well as area resources and archived copies of this series, can also be found there. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please contact us at the station 218-595-6195 or email me at Katya, K-A-T-Y-A, ktwh@gmail.com. All feedback is welcome. Living Through the End of Life is made possible by a team of volunteers. Thanks to Peg Zahorik, Ellen Huffschmidt, Julie Johnson, Jan Swanson, and Chris Belfield for their production support. To Paul Hansen for his website expertise, and Bruce the Moose for putting it all together on the program grid. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.